So you want to be a quantum physicist. And the good news is that you've got quite a good chance of being one. And even better news is that some of the hurdles that I experienced aren't necessarily there. You don't have to do it the hard way. So welcome to another podcast of Peter Hill Explains, where I, Peter Hill, try to make complex things in science a little bit more accessible. And this time I'm going to talk to you about quantum physics and the possibility of you actually understanding it and actually being a quantum physicist. Now, as I said before, I did it the hard way. Obviously, the quantum physics was out there. The equations were there. Say the critical equation, which is the Schrodinger wave equation, which is sort of the heart equation, was there. And as with all areas of knowledge, it's getting the tools and having a go and practicing it yourself. It's sort of like if you're playing golf, you've got to actually at some stage get the golf clubs out and the golf balls and have a hit around a golf course, and you gradually learn that way. You're not necessarily a pro, but you've got to start off. And for me, I started off with these equations, and as you know, you can look at equations, it's not until you actually put in the numbers. And to put the numbers in, I actually ground them through computers. And they have sort of various techniques of solving, and actually solved real-life problems with them. So I looked at the spectra, the light, different colours of light coming off different gases, quite complex things, and actually put them into a computer, put them into supercomputers, and gradually got a good understanding of quantum mechanics. Now, this is not to say that you have to do the same thing. It's a bit like an explorer going into a new land and finally finding a quick path for everyone else to go up. So rather than talking about the effort of getting there, what is it like to be a quantum physicist? And it's basically what is it like to actually know an area of knowledge which makes things much more understandable and meaningful in life. So it's quite exciting when I look at a shiny glass surface. I see electrons. I see a lot of other things that people without the knowledge find difficult to see, or they just can't see it. So it's very worthwhile. It's like any area of knowledge. The more you know, the more you understand, the richer the life experience is. Now, this is all great, but if you're pretty much the only person in the block that understands it, it also means that you sort of have to get used to not the isolation of yourself, but the isolation created by not everyone else or being the only person who understands it. And then you sort of see things in a different perspective. So you see people explaining away questions which you can possibly well answer. So they explain away the lack of need to know things. So people sort of handle not knowing quantum mechanics by inventing a new sort of knowledge they have, a surety that they don't need to know it. So for me personally, it's led to a very interesting life, but I've not necessarily had the social support coming through. That's not to say that I think it's not worthwhile for everyone to know in the future. Indeed, there's really inescapable. The human race has got to eventually grow up and teach quantum mechanics to their kids. Now, quantum mechanics is sort of a really fantastic thing to have, because in terms of your own life, because it, I suppose, explains your consciousness. It explains why things are solid, why stuff has volume. So it's a really aesthetic, hands-on thing. And you can see light is quantum mechanical. A lot of things you experience there is great. And it's sort of like once you've done a bushwalk to one point, you sort of know how to bushwalk. And so there's you sort of know the knowledge landscape. And it means that you can strike out in other directions. And by the time you add a few other areas of knowledge to it, like general relativity, statistical mechanics, this is the, I suppose simple answers from complex, what appears enormously complex things to dissect, that's statistical mechanics. By the time you add a few of those together, and you can, and grab, you tend to get to grow in multiple directions. And so I think what's strange is that people talk themselves out of growing in one direction and then all directions. And the knowledge they gain is how to feel knowledgeable when actually being a little bit ignorant. And I'm not being arrogant here. I've just having lived through it. And at no point am I really talking down society. I'm really talking up the great joy of understanding stuff. So what is it like to be a quantum physicist, and what do you need to know? Well, I think the analogy is, and it might be a bit of a funny one, that you decide that you're going to go into the Olympics, and there's a stadium over there, there's people cheering, and the first thing you have to do is get out of your civilian day clothes and actually don running gear and your running equipment, and you have to jog off into the stadium. And you have to, when you're in the stadium, so this is an analogy, guys, and when you're in the stadium, you have to switch off the crowd. They may not want you there, they may be booing at you, but you have to focus down and focus in on the track and field events and pick up your javelin, throw the javelin, pick up the shot put, throw it. And you've really got to sort of shut out the crowd and think about the actual javelin or shot put or hurdles, and actually just be in your own world, in your own bubble, without listening to the crowd. Now, the analogy here is that people are walking around with some old-style classical mechanics, and they've got to put on or take on board some new ideas, which are like the new clothing of these. And we'll get onto these fundamental new ideas, and a lot of you will think, oh, this is crazy. And this would be like for you walking here and seeing a set of runner's clothes, the shorts, the singlet, the runners with spikes, and all that type of stuff. And it wouldn't make sense unless you also had in mind putting them on and running off to the stadium. And you also had in mind the ability to shut out the crowd and actually focus on the event. So as the analogy goes, your civilian clothes or your street clothes are the clothes of classical mechanics, where things are nice and solid and everything's a clockwork universe and there's an order hierarchy and things like that. And you've got to put on your sports clothes, which are some of the basic ideas of quantum mechanics. And this is what I'm going to give to you, talk to you this time, and you don't necessarily have to grind through the way I did, by actually solving the Schrodinger wave equation, fixing it to various molecules, and eventually, you know, throwing your hands up and going to a supercomputer and calculating curves. You don't have to do that. You can actually put on these clothes, if you like to speak, I like to think of it that way, and run off into the stadium. It's pretty similar to what I did, and sort of shut out the crowd saying, no, you can't do this, and say, yes, I can. I'm dressed up. I can actually really understand some new things with some of these ideas. So that's the idea. I'm going to try and tell you a few sort of home truths about quantum mechanics and about the world. In fact, the world you live in, probably for the first time. Some of you may find it a bit shocking. And I know some of the stories that people have been told. I suppose I did believe it at certain stages. And then when I realized that it wasn't true, I forgot about it and got on with truth and the understanding. I really didn't care that perhaps not everyone else understood it. But then when I reached the education system where these things are a part of a real dogma and everyone passes it on to each other and it becomes true, not because of any equation, but true because someone else said it. So we're going to go into some of those truths and move on. Now, one of the most fundamental thing that I've heard from, I suppose, from teachers, but even from big names like Stephen Hawking and people like that, is the fundamental interpretation that atoms are mostly full of empty space. And we'll get into that. And there's a view here from a very famous experiment explained by many teachers incorrectly, that when alpha particles, which are little bullets which are fired from decaying nucleuses, fire out and go through a thin gold foil. So you can actually bash gold until it's only a few atoms thick, and they use this for gold inlay. So they can get a small lump of gold and actually cover a whole wall with it. They can bash it so thinly and make something look very big. And it's sort of an Olympics story here, because I've just found out that the gold medals that they give Australian athletes, or all athletes, are actually not gold. They've got a thin gold foil on the outside. They're gold plated, which is rather strange, because you see the athletes, when they get their gold medal, bite into it to prove it's gold. And interestingly, it's not gold. You find out it's actually just common steel with gold on the outside. But getting back, you've got these alpha particles being fired through the gold foil, and lo and behold, most of them go right through, and a few just hit the very tiny nucleus at the center, if you like, the king of the atom, which has got this very hierarchical view that you've got the king and the actual electrons around as tiny little servants, and the rest of the atom's empty space. It's a solar system model, so the model must be correct. The atom is as empty as the space between us and the sun. And you can sort of say, well, I can see the big and the small has to be like that. But I suppose there's the very first thing to get into your head about quantum mechanics. I could talk about the maths of it, and it's a beautiful piece of maths. But quantum mechanics doesn't actually have any surface. So if you had a really tiny spacecraft, you couldn't land on the surface of a proton or the nucleus. It's sort of like a gas giant. Your spacecraft would get more and more into a denser atmosphere and eventually go through the core, or the very center of the proton, and out the other side. So there's no such thing as a surface in quantum mechanics. And that's quite incredible. You can't actually land on an electron. No matter how much you magnify it, it's not that it's jumping around about. It's actually not a solid object. It's a fuzzy object. It actually, quite technically and quite amazingly, stretches throughout the entire universe. And don't be too frightened by this. It's very thin, but the electron doesn't have a beginning or an end. It's just got a mostly... The electron is mostly in an area. It's not that it's flittering in and out of the universe. And there's a real sort of science scandal of someone who's come up with this idea, was so wed to the idea of an electron being a point. This is Max Born. He actually tricked Schrodinger and other people into authoring in a book that he edited, and he slipped in his own paper without, I suppose, proper peer review, and it's become legend now that the electrons are actual points, and they actually flutter in and out of existence and form this cloud. Well, I'm here to tell you that that's not true, and historically you can go through, and the computer models don't support that, and there's actually no scientific evidence or scientific use for that particular theory. This is the electrons being small, and they're rushing around so fast so you can't quite see where they are. No, you can actually see electrons, and if you see any shiny metal, you can actually see the electrons on the surface of the crystal. That's the silver is the color of an electron. But going back, we've got that first concept that nothing has a surface. There's no surfaces in quantum mechanics. And so this immediately makes people feel very nervous. If there's no surfaces, it can't be a sort of a miniaturization. And in fact, it is correct that miniaturization stops and you start with quantum mechanics. These particles are actually soft, fuzzy things, and they don't have a surface, and you can literally put your hand through it, and you say, oh, that's very hard to believe, but you'll have to listen to me. Electrons can slide, and mostly slide through each other. Now, there's another piece of information I have to give to you which will sort of make this, and I can see my listeners with furrowed brows now going, how is this so? But I want to put aside for the moment that the humble neutron. So a neutron is the partner nucleon or partner particle within a nucleus. And again, this is something which is much richer in quantum mechanics. So in a nucleus, you have protons and neutrons. You can't have two protons or three protons by themselves in the nucleus. You have to have a neutron there in a nucleus, or at least as many neutrons as the protons in the nucleus, for the nucleus to be stable. So protons, if you like, are the glue, or provide the necessary things to the dinner party of the nucleus for it to sit, for it to stick together. Now, the thing about a neutron is that it is a quantum particle, and it can actually go through matter because it is this fuzzy thing without a surface, and a ghost-like thing. And so if you were to hold out your hand and I had a cup full of neutrons, and they were cold neutrons, obviously they're not bumping them out, and I just pour the cup over, they're actual particles, they feel gravity, I poured it onto your hand, you wouldn't feel anything because it wouldn't touch your hand, because neutrons can actually just travel through matter, and it could actually go through your hands, pour all the way through your hands, and actually drop down into the earth. Now, you say, oh, this is a bit hard, but that's actually how a nuclear reactor works. It produces neutrons, and the neutrons just flow through the nuclear reactor. They flow into the metal and actually react with the uranium. They're not dodging things, they're just flowing through. We have to get through here. So our first view is the most fundamental difference between classical mechanics and quantum mechanics is that the particles or things in quantum mechanics don't have hard surfaces. So if you imagine that's like taking off your shoes and your black and white socks, your black socks, and putting on a pair of running socks. I'm not going to get into too much clothing here because we're going to have you naked at some point. But imagine that's taking off one old idea and putting on a new idea, allowing you to sprint forward into the stadium of knowledge, and where you're going to have to stop listening to the crowd saying, don't go there, and listen to me and say, your coach, and say, you can do it, you can get that gold medal of knowledge. But going back here, we've got the idea that the particles are fuzzy and soft. The second, the second thing, which is a bit frightening, and it's something that you can really understand once you understand Higgs bosons and a whole lot of, I suppose, aspects of what mass is. And mass, I could do several podcasts going back in history to the history of mass. And I should go back into the history of mass really quickly. Mass evolved at the start or at the end of the Dark Ages when they were trying to work out some heresies. And they had the descriptive word for objects of matter, but they had to have something which sort of got around the descriptive blockage, and they came up with a number. This is a number which are associated with an object which is conserved. So they really got mass way out of the, we sort of lucked it trying to work our way through theological problems. So this is why I've really gone to theologists and sort of dig deeper under Newton. I talk about mass because this is a really important thing. People think that if I've got a block of butter, which is 250 grams, and I take out a small amount, that smaller amount, which is 5 grams, that's smaller. It's physically smaller. So a chip of the old block, so to speak. So all our experience around us tells us that objects have got hard. They've definitely got surfaces. I'm standing on a surface. And next thing, another thing is that objects are, if they're lighter, they're smaller. So if I take a chip off something, it's smaller. But in fact, that's not how quantum mechanics works. So if something is less massive, it's bigger. Now, you can actually work through the maths of it, and I'll try and give a bit of view. Sort of mass is sort of like little hooks into space, and if you've got less hooks into space, is actually bigger. So the electron, which they discovered in 1899, it was really, the names escaped me. I'll stop for a moment and think of them. I have got a name, J.J. Thompson. When he found an electron, he got the mass of an electron, and he found this little baby was 1,280th of the mass of a proton. So in a hydrogen atom, so if you were the mass of a hydrogen atom, mass of a helium, the mass of an electron wouldn't be nothing. It would be a few, sort of like half a cup of tea, that sort of mass. So it's not insignificant, but it's there. And sort of the assumption is, aha, we have found the mass of the electron, which is true, they couldn't deny it. And they have sort of automatically thought and made a mistake ever since. A mistake which has really gone into the school books and diagrams. Lots of scientists believe it. Therefore, the electron is smaller than the nucleus. It's small. It's easily, say, a factor of 1,000 smaller. Because it weighs that much. And so if you took a bolt out of a car and it has to be smaller. But unfortunately, that turned out not to be true. That the lighter things are, the less hooks they've got in space, the larger they are. What really threw things is, and we're keeping on this misconception, your old clothes, that electrons are smaller than the nucleus. They found out that, hang on, the proton is really, really small. It's a billionth the size. Easily a billionth the size, 10 to 15. Look, incredibly small size there. I'm just trying to think, the radius is 10 to the minus 15, an atom is 10 to the minus 11, 10 to, it's some mind-boggling, let's put this in my head. It's a million millionths the volume of an atom. It's incredibly small. And so the electron must be 1,000 times smaller than that. So an electron's a really small dot. Well, unfortunately, that's not the case. Now, for me, I suppose because I was really not speaking to anyone very much about it. You can't sort of, to your mates at the barbecue, say, hey, I'm looking at the size of an electron. But indeed I did. I actually really believed that the electron was incredibly tiny, and then eventually did supercomputer calculations of electrons in a very small molecule. And I can still remember at ANU Laser Physics going through the sheets of computer paper. Oh, back then, you can remember those very large sheets with the holes on the side and the perforations. And I went through looking for where was the electrons flicking around. And then I got pages and pages of smooth data. And then it struck me. I said, oh, the electron is actually big. And then things began to click. I can remember that I think it was, afternoon tea. I was going through it. The warm autumn light was coming through. I said, oh. And then I remembered that the actual electron actually permeates the nucleus. So the electron actually not only permeates a whole atom, it actually exists quite strongly inside the nucleus. It's actually like a ghost. And that each electron is the size of an atom. And this is something with quantum mechanics. If the quantum numbers are different, the electron has got a slightly different shape, it can actually sit through each other. So you can imagine the IKEA kit for an electron, all the bits of an atom. So say you've got, uranium 92 electrons there. You've set up you've bought your uranium atom, and you've got the nucleus in a small box, and then you've got a box for the first electron. Now, that first box is the size of the uranium atom, and so is the next box. You've got 92 boxes the size of the uranium atom, and each electron slides through itself through in space. And this is a pretty remarkable thing, that the electrons are that large and they actually flow through each other in space. And so that's really another aspect of quantum mechanics, that the electrons being waves, the waves can travel through each other in space. And you say, oh, look, I find it's hard to believe. Well, if you've been taught that the atoms are particles, you will obviously go and think of a cricket ball hitting a bat. They have to go through each other. But we do have waves actually traveling through each other all the time. And thank goodness they do. And you'd have this every time you're listening to this podcast or having a conversation with several people talking to you. Their waves just meld together and go through each other, and travel through each other. Now, and again, I suppose that's, I'll stop a bit and talk about waves. And you also have this with the light. You have different extended light sources coming and illuminating one area from different areas. They do overlap and go through each other in space. So this is another thing, is that something is got more mass the smaller it is. In fact, if you can just go here, the proton is 1,000 times or 2,000 times heavier, and so its radius is 1/2000th of the radius of an electron, but then its volume is 2,000 cubed, which is 8 billionths of the size of an electron, which all adds up. And this is what we're all telling. And of course, if I can just go into a traveling wave, if I speak, my voice goes out. But if I'm in a room, my voice echoes forever and ever. And if it was a lossless room, if I yelled, the yell would go forever and ever. And that's true for an electron held in the room of charge field around a nucleus. So you can imagine it's sort of like a room, the charge field, the charge attraction, sort of a room, and the electron is bouncing as a wave inside it forever, always going backward and forth, or not actually going backward and forth. The curvature of the electron away in any direction is traveling in towards you continuously. That's a rather a beautiful thing to see. And of course, quantum mechanics is a very beautiful thing to see and understand. Now, you may say, let's go through the two unfamiliar things. I'm going to stop it here. There's a few more things I can say about quantum mechanics. But the two fundamental things that you need to get, the picture you get without having to do all the supercomputer calculations and all the quantum mechanical calculations, and I will close by actually talking about the Schrodinger wave equation, but the two things you have to get is, one is that there's no surfaces, and the other thing is that the lighter something is, the bigger it is, and therefore you get electrons actually not being largely empty space. The actual space is a very thinly filled, but still filled, electron, I suppose, filling of the area. Now, I can't stop. I have to point out here that this electron filling of space is what we're actually standing on. We're standing on basically a popcorn world of full, thick electrons. The actual Earth is as big as it is simply because of the size of the number of electrons inside it. If you were to fall over, you'd be hitting electrons. So let's just stop here and summarize once again. Electrons are fuzzy, or all quantum mechanical things are fuzzy. And two, the lighter they are, the bigger they are. And three, they can actually slide through each other in space. So your atom, which is uncuttable, you can't cut it and make it smaller. You can cut it and make it bigger. This is the most amazing thing. So if you ionize something, the two components are much bigger than putting it all together. It's actually quite mind-boggling. And of course, there are lots of things to see, to explain metals, to explain the bulk of objects, why something is bulky and thick. And surely that's a very rich and beautiful thing to see. But before, I want to close by actually looking at how the Schrödinger wave equation is different from, strangely, it's not different from sophisticated economics equations, but different from the sort of equations you use in accounting where you count things up, where you look at the amount of money in your bank and how much goes out each day, and or you look at the amount of fuel in your car and how much that means in terms of the range you go. These are very simple things where the equations show the relations of two different concepts. And of course, the Schrödinger wave equation, people say, I can recognize that. That has psi, psi, the wave function. What is that? And the actual thing is that Schrödinger wave equations are equations of equations. That's right, yeah. So a electron is actually a fuzzy object without a surface, and it extends from basically minus infinity to plus infinity, just like a graph extends. And you say, well, so a electron is a graph. It's an equation, but in terms of what an equation is, it really is a graph. It's a three-dimensional graph, and it extends. And because I can say things about it, I can say that equation, the Schrödinger wave equation, is an equation of equations. And basically, the equations can be anything, but only certain equations will fit, be solved by, if I do this to it, it equals that same equation hit this way and that way. And so you get this thing that the Schrödinger wave equation, to understand it or to get in to understand the rules of the game. So you've donned on your clothing, you've walked into the stadium, you're about to actually have a go at some knowledge. To understand the rules of the game, the understanding of how the rules work or apply to you is to know that a Schrödinger wave equation is an equation about equations. And this is quite a beautiful thing, and something which is an equation, and is not just an object with simple properties. So an object with simple properties is like a billiard ball. It's been hit at a particular time, and it goes off with a certain momentum and bounces back and forth, and I can sort of all imagine it. But something which is an equation is a guitar string. It's hit on two sides, and it vibrates and creates music. And this is, I suppose, the beauty of quantum mechanics. Your electrons are actually almost notes of music. And you say, oh, this is so hard to believe. But when you actually look at the music of atoms through a prism, you can see it playing different notes at different frequencies as it's playing itself out. And so with a prism, I can look at a lamp or a sun or a star, and I can see the music of the atom traveling via quantum mechanics onto a sheet. And I can see the music. I can't hear. Oh, I suppose you could. It would be very interesting to convert spectra into musical notes. It would be a very beautiful thing to do, to actually hear. We should actually do that. Although you are used to hearing, a quantum physicist can look at a spectra and hear the notes of different atoms. And so I can get a spectroscope, look at a lamp, and say, I can see mercury in that lamp. I can see the music of it there. So it's a very rich and beautiful thing to have. And unfortunately, we live in an intolerant world. People really want to, I suppose, shut down the understanding, the things that they consider heresy. And you walk away saying, what do they know? They actually don't know quantum mechanics. They don't know the answer for things, but they do know how to keep ignorant. And you keep ignorant by actually shutting down understanding of quantum physics and telling generation after generation that the electron is smaller than the proton and the atom is full of empty space and the proton and neutron are full... are actual solid objects, and they bounce off each other, and
we don't know, and there's mysticism. And in my view, that's like keeping your non-track and field clothes on and walking into the stadium and saying, well, I've got to be a spectator. I can't actually participate in there. But for you, that's if you don that clothing on and walk into that stadium and understand things, that's not quite enough for you. You have to actually be able to focus in and have the dedication of an athlete to slowly go through and, I suppose, stick with it. I'd say, look, it would take about, probably a few months to get the basics of quantum mechanics, a year to actually solve some of the equations. It's really good if you actually start writing small computer programs and simulating it yourself. And it's a very beautiful thing. And the task is not as hard for you as it is for me. And hopefully you will go into a world which is a bit more tolerant of quantum mechanics and the stories behind it. And you'll be able to understand why the history and the sociology of why people sort of deny it and go through this classical physics, and you'll be able to be at peace when you hear a mistake, like the atom's full of empty space and the electrons are really tiny and they're going in and they're disappearing and they disappear from the universe here and reappear here, all things which are transparently physical fictions. They sort of break the laws of physics. So hopefully you'll be able to go there. And so you want to be a quantum physicist? It's not putting you down at all. I think it's a very noble thing to do, and it is definitely accessible. And you mightn't get many friends, people who are very skeptical, but that what they know is how to keep themselves ignorant. And you, I hope, will enjoy physics and life and science and understand things like transistors and semiconductors and metals and indeed stars and things like that. Once you've got this, I suppose, golden elevator into knowledge, which is quantum physics. So I hope that's inspired you. And until next time, keep on doing science.